Today's episode of The Grave Talks is brought to you by HelloFresh. Go to HelloFresh.com/GraveTalks80 and use code GraveTalks80 to get a total of $80 off across 5 boxes, including free shipping on your first box. Go to HelloFresh.com/GraveTalks80, use code GraveTalks80, and get a total of $80 off across 5 boxes, including free shipping on your first box. Today on The Grave Talks, the Warren team returns to the Conjuring House. When Ed and Lorraine Warren first investigated the Conjuring House, it struck Ed as such an infested location that he joked, "If they ever make a movie about our work, it should be about this house." Many years later, and after Ed's passing, that comment became a reality. A reality that sparked numerous movies, books, and investigations into a house that, in some ways, feels like a paranormal playground for investigators. But just as with a playground, danger exists if things are not used properly. Today, we hear the story of a recent investigation from Eric Vitale, member of the team founded by Ed and Lorraine Warren, the New England Society for Paranormal Research.
In the prior interview, I was always into Ed and Lorraine Warren. I knew of them. I've got all their books. I've watched a lot of interviews. But this was kind of like a hush-hush case, especially for someone like me that lived in Jersey that didn't have the opportunity to like come to Connecticut. You know, I was young when they were doing the whole college circuit. So this was the case that they spoke about a lot, but I didn't know about it. So I actually didn't even know about this case until the movie came out. And I was like, oh my God, you know, they're making a movie about Ed and Lorraine Warren. And it was just so captivating. I remember I went to a special screening before it even came out, and it just like, it blew my mind. And knowing how close it was to him, like, I would love to go investigate that house. Never thought I'd have the opportunity. This is before I was even on Nesper. So it's kind of crazy the way things come full circle in life sometimes.
Sure. I mean, when the movie comes out, as a lot of movies do, you know, you'll see things being over-exaggerated and sometimes storylines barely even being followed. But with this case, actually, you know, it's interesting when you talk to Andrea and stuff. It's pretty damn close to reality. I mean, in fact, reality might be even scarier than what the movie portrayed. How did you connect those dots to if you didn't have a whole lot of knowledge about it to realize, oh my gosh, this thing is, you know, this is kind of the real deal.
Yeah. I was super, I mean, when I first saw that movie, I was like, this is frightening. I mean, I remember the scene when Bathsheba comes down over Carolyn and she's just like vomiting all over her face. I'm like, oh my God. And I started digging in to the real story. And obviously after the movie came out, Andrea was like all over YouTube and she put her books out. She was very sweet enough to send me all her books signed. She's a very nice woman. Mm-hmm. So I started going back and researching the case, and there's some really deep stuff on YouTube with Ed Warren talking about Carolyn. The movie's pretty straightforward about what happened, but again, they had to take artistic licensing. Sure. There's some things in that movie that, I mean, there was no exorcism. Ed Warren did not do an exorcism on Carolyn in that house. Mm-hmm. You know, only an exorcist can do that, but they would bring in clergy when they had to for things like that. But that was more for like a climactic ending of the film, which, I mean, it worked well in the movie, but that just didn't happen. Yeah. There was a seance in the house, though. Mm-hmm. It did do a seance.
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about some of the factual history of what happened within the house that you learned about that really stood out to you that drew you even closer to this.
I remember something that always stood out to me. Carolyn Perrin actually would sit by the fireplace at night and have an orange. And there was one particular evening where she cut into an orange and it just blood just came out of it. And that was always that kind of like irked me the first time I heard it. And that was actually something that we tried to do when we investigated there back in February. We actually investigated the house February 8th of this year, and I brought a bunch of oranges, and it was just like something to see. It was an experiment, and we were there with a couple of girls, and I was like, if one of you girls want to cut into that and we'll film and see if blood comes out. That would be some really amazing evidence. It did not happen, but that was something that always stood out to me, hearing about the blood coming out of the orange. And
I want to ask about that specific one there, because I don't know that I've ever heard it brought up in conversation. Not that I listen to every single interview that's ever been done.
Yeah.
But there is such a thing as a blood orange.
Yes, there is. Yes.
So is there any, has that ever been addressed of like, maybe they had a blood orange and it appeared that way? Because I mean, that could be somewhat, I'm not over trying to like debunk things, but I do try and look at, you know, what could happen.
The way, when I heard Ed speak, I mean, it was Ed interviewing Carolyn, and she was just like, you know, she was terrified. It was like straight up blood came out.
Okay.
Pouring out of this orange, and it was like a puddle of blood was on the floor.
Yeah.
Like more blood that could have been inside of that orange. You know what I mean?
It was different. I mean, you can tell the difference between real blood and blood oranges.
Yes.
But I mean,
yes.
I could see a little kid being confused. But the thing is, there were so many other things going on at the same time. That's where it's like, I could see confusion happening when you're constantly surrounded by paranormal, that, you know, just something that really is kind of accidental that happens and you happen to have a blood orange, you're going to think, holy crap, this is, you know.
Yeah, there was a lot going on in that house. And I mean, we spent the night there, and we're actually going back. The New England Society for Psychic Research, we're going back on October 16th. I think all of us are going to go, and there's around 15 of us on the team. And, you know, we honor Ed and Lorraine Warren's legacy, and we want to go back and see what we can dig up. It's open to the public now, so it's, like, not as special, because, like, everyone's, like, going to the house now. But that's a very well-known Ed and Lorraine Warren case, so we're all going back. Because when I went back in February, I went with one other team member and a handful of other investigators, but we're going now with, like, all of NSPR, so we're really looking forward to that. And we're going to live stream when we're there.
Yeah, no, I think that's going to be very awesome to have that experience with everybody there. Let's back up a little bit more. Let's tell me more about the interest in the case, and then how you ended up getting more and more connected to learning about it. And what was some of the research that you did prior to ever, you know, setting foot in the house for the first time?
I basically just went on YouTube and dug up everything I could find. I reached out to Andrea. She sent me the books. I read the books. And once I had found out that a couple bought the house, I was like, oh, man, we're going to be able to. I just knew we were going to be able to get in that house.
Mm-hmm.
And we were lucky enough. We got in it was February 8th of this year we went. And there was another team that was going to go, and then they bailed out or something, so we had the opportunity. But we weren't allowed to, like, live stream or anything like that, because I think they were under contract, because Ghost Adventures had filmed there prior. So I did a bunch of research online. I read the books, and then I was just anxious to get in there. And it's, I mean, the place is just wild, man. I mean, I remember when I first walked into the basement, I just felt like something didn't want me to be there. It's so active in that house. I mean, I've got pages of notes about things that happened in that house when we were there and prior. I had a nightmare the night before we actually went, which I'm pretty certain was Bathsheba giving me a warning, because she knew I was going to that house.
I want to get to the nightmare. I want to get to what it felt like when you just set foot into the house and then the various rooms in the house. But before we get to that, let's talk about the previous owners of the house, because it had been out of the parent family for quite some time. But in that window of time between the parents leaving, because the movie portrays them, you know, getting in and out of that house. In reality, they sat there for well over, I believe it was 10 years.
It was like a decade they were there. The family after the parents, I don't recall their name, but I do remember them being pretty upset after the movie came out, because, of course, there's tons of wannabe ghost hunters just trespassing and kids just walking down the driveway wanting to, you know, hang out and have a good time. And they, I think they actually sued Warner Brothers, and then they just moved.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember their name, but they weren't very happy when the movie came out, and I don't think they experienced anything. But then again, it takes a certain type of person to spark up activity. So,
sure.
Especially now, we've got people going in investigating. They want to experience something. I don't think there's any. I don't think you can talk to anyone that's been in that house, and like, not one person will be like, "I didn't experience anything," because that house, it's pretty active. I mean, the owner right now, Corey, he's a pretty good guy. He's into investigating. Him and his wife, they bought the house because they knew people wanted to go there and see it and investigate. It's historical. So props to them for doing that. But their own son doesn't want to stay there because he saw a black mist that scared the hell out of him, and he doesn't want to go back.
Back to the conversation in just a moment. First, our supporter today, need to thank them, HelloFresh. You can get fresh, pre-measured ingredients, mouth-watering, seasonal recipes delivered right to your door with HelloFresh. It's America's number one meal kit. HelloFresh lets you skip those trips to the grocery store and makes home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. I love HelloFresh. In fact, we just had HelloFresh for dinner last night, Parmesan chicken, and it was awesome and so easy to prepare. I'm telling you, this thing, it was an easy one. You put the chicken out, you put the sour cream that's all pre-measured for you, put the Parmesan breadcrumbs and stuff right on there, and you pop it in the oven. Yeah, side was some glazed carrots. It was great. Couscous on the side. Couscous had some chopped shallots in it, and it was very tasty. I loved it. HelloFresh, that saves you time. It saves you money. Saves you stress. Everything is just right there for you. They offer convenient delivery right to your doorstep. Easy home cooking for the family. Recipes are easy to follow, quick to make, simple steps. Pictures actually guide you on the way. So whether you're someone like myself who is an experienced cook, or you're someone who doesn't have a whole lot of experience in the kitchen, HelloFresh is going to be easy for you either way. HelloFresh cuts out the stressful meal planning, grocery store trips. I mean, who wants to go to the grocery store right now anyhow, right? I mean, so you can enjoy cooking and get dinner on the table in about 30 minutes or even less. And save 40% by using HelloFresh versus shopping at your local grocery store. And it is more convenient, too. The variety, it is there. You can pick out your favorite recipes that you want to pick out for your upcoming boxes. You can even sort them by low-calorie, vegetarian, kid-friendly recipes. And then they deliver it fresh, high-quality, pre-portioned ingredients so you can make your meals right there on time. Like I said, I'm pretty darn good in the kitchen. I'm not like trying to be braggadocious, but I am. But you know what? I really like the pre-portioning. It's one of my favorite parts because there's so much less waste. And you know what? It makes it easier too when you're just trying to make the meal. It's like, oh, forgot to cut that. Nope, it's all set for you right there and ready to go. Right now, great offer for you guys. Go to HelloFresh.com/GraveTalks80. And use code GRAVETALKS80 to get a total of $80 off across 5 boxes, including free shipping on your first box. Go to HelloFresh.com/GRAVETALKS80 and use code GRAVETALKS80 to get a total of $80 off across 5 boxes, including free shipping on your first box. Now, back to our conversation. Obviously, you can't speak for the new owners or Corey or anybody, but I was hesitant when I saw, you know, just from afar, someone buying the house and, you know, having an interest in it. And that's great. But then
they're investigators. Yeah, they're pretty cool people.
Investigators opening it up then for other people to investigate. But at the same time, you know, making it your home. My thought was, is this a good idea? Is this going to end well?
Well, I'm not 100% sure they live there like year round. I think they have another house, and when it's open to the public, they kind of like hang out. There's like a side room in the house where they've got like TVs set up, and there's cameras in every room, so they're watching what everyone's doing. I don't think they live there, to be honest with you.
Okay.
I think they live somewhere else. I'm not 100% on that.
Yeah, because I mean, I've seen it presented in different ways. I know initially it was kind of presented as this is going to be our home, and then I've heard various things, and I get it. If you got it and you want to, you know, preserve it and you want to you know, get the message out of the house and let people study it. Cool. My just thought was not this is a bad idea, but I don't know there was a, you know, the idea of living in it and then having kids and all that. Like, is this going to work out well? Was my concern more than anything else.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But yeah, I was thinking the same thing, too. Believe me.
Let's talk about the Bathsheba story a little bit. Give our audience, sure, if they're unaware of it, a little bit of background and historically, how accurate is the Bathsheba story that was presented in the movie to reality? What is reality on the Bathsheba story?
The thing about Bathsheba, I mean, there's nothing there's nothing like on record about her, like historically proving that she did what was said in the movie, but she was caring for a child that ended up dying, and ended up having a nail put through its head. And I mean, I'm going by from the stories I heard from the people that I work with now, Tony Spera, you know, members of the New England Society for Psychic Research. When Lorraine Warren walked into that house, she became overwhelmed by a very malevolent spirit. And it said, you know, my name is Bathsheba. And the story goes that she, you know, she sacrificed her baby to the devil. And she put a nail through the baby's head. She didn't hang herself outside like the movie portrays. She actually died years later.
Mm-hmm.
But she comes to people in their dreams once they get involved with this case. And it happened to me before I went there, and it was a very frightening dream.
Why do you think she does this? Why do you think she does come to people in dreams? Is there a message? Is there a goal? What? It's a personal opinion question, but
I believe she may have put a curse on that land, and she was an evil person, and she's just giving people warnings like, don't come here. Like, I own this land. Mm-hmm. This is my house. This is my land. I don't want you here. Because when we were there, I mean, I can't tell you how many times we got get out out of the spirit box and EVPs.
When you say she was an evil person, what do you mean by that?
Practicing witchcraft, black magic.
Okay.
Being into Satanism.
Okay. So it basically, the things that she was involved in, giving her, does that, let's just kind of on the same topic, but a little bit off. When someone is into something like that and they're practicing black magic, Satanism, things of that nature, conjuring up, you know, demons or things that were not walking this earth at one time, once you get to the other side, does that give you more power than the average soul who died, who, you know, worked at, you know, the Ford plant down the road that really wasn't into that or really wasn't practicing any of those sort of things? Is it almost, in a weird way, does it give you kind of a dark superpower on the other side?
I wouldn't say a dark superpower, but I mean, she was already open to this stuff. I mean, for lack of a better term, she was already like in league with the devil.
Mm-hmm.
So it could make her a strong spirit, even though she was a human spirit. She wasn't a demon, but she was believed to have conjured up demons.
Again, this is just a personal opinion question based on your experience. Can a human soul, a human being like the Bathsheba character, can the person like that turn into or become a demon? Or are they always going to be relegated to being a human spirit, but very devious?
What I think can happen is after you die and once it's just your spirit, I think you're, you know, a human spirit, I think, could actually be possessed by a demonic spirit. So I think, to answer your question, in the afterlife, a human spirit could become possessed by a demonic spirit and do these horrific things, much like it could happen when you're alive. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if I'm answering it.
That's interesting.
Correctly. But, you know, instead of like become, you're so evil when you die, you become a demon. Maybe it's possible, but I do think that after you die, if you are such an evil person, you could, you know, your spirit could become possessed by a demonic spirit.
And at that point, there's not necessarily the living or priests or anyone, as far as we're aware, that can intervene and help someone rid. So
I mean, that's a whole other ball game.
It is. I mean, you really just kind of presented a whole other concept as we continue to talk more and more about these things.
Yeah.
You know, I always have moments, and I'm always surprised by them this many years in, that I still have things where it's like, I didn't think of it that way. You just presented one. I didn't think of it that way.
It's pretty wild.
Yeah, of a human spirit being possessed by something on the other side, which would actually...
A human spirit becoming possessed by an inhuman spirit.
Yeah,
exactly.
Which is very interesting. I mean, that I wonder if that could explain sometimes where we have what appears to be a human spirit showing up, and sometimes we take the approach of, well, it can take any form it wants. Is it truly taking any form it wants, or is it taking on the spirit of a living person? And that's what we're seeing in some cases, because it is possessed by something else, which is a whole other ball game and rabbit hole to go down.
Yeah, exactly.
Now that's very interesting. Tell me about the nightmare that you had the night before going into the house for the first time.
Well, obviously, leading up to the investigation, I was really excited, maybe a little nervous, because I knew that it was a really active location and I knew about the things that had happened there. So I was already given this recognition. So the night before, I went to sleep, and I remember I had a dream that I was standing underneath a tree, and in the distance I saw an old woman with long gray hair, and she pointed at me, and then all of a sudden everything just like sped up, and she just like rushed right into my face, and I woke up, and when I woke up I realized that my left arm was extended. I was actually being pulled out of my bed, and I stood up, I commanded whatever was there in the name of Jesus Christ to go back where it came from, and then I heard a growl. And I stood awake for a little while after that, because that got me a little riled up, to say the least.
Had you ever had dreams like that prior to going into other investigations? Not necessarily the exact same dream, but...
I mean, I've had pretty horrific dreams, but nothing like that, where it's like I'm being pulled out of my bed as I wake up.
Yeah.
That was something else.
In terms of, obviously, you have some physical evidence, or like you're being pulled out of your bed when you wake up. Did the dream itself to you feel different than other dreams?
It was just so real and horrifying. I wake up and I'm like trying to like comprehend what's happening, and I'm like, why is my arm sticking up like this? Why am I? I'm like, oh my God, something's pulling me out of bed. And then you know I commanded it to leave, and I heard a growl. I heard a growl right after that, and I was like, "Man, you've got to be kidding me!"
Mm-hmm.
And it was that was the morning of the day we were going to drive to Rhode Island to investigate the house. Which I just want to say too, everyone knows it as the Conjuring House. It's a great name. It's an epic name for a horror movie franchise. But Ed Warren always called it the Bewitched Farmhouse. And he used to always tell Tony at the end of lectures, you know, Tony, if they ever made a movie about one of our cases, it should be about that damn Bewitched Farmhouse in Rhode Island. So the fact that they made the first Conjuring movie about the house in Rhode Island, it's just that's amazing. And I think Ed would have absolutely loved it.
What was the reason for the story of that house? You know, how silent, you know, he would talk about it in lectures and stuff, but the amount of things that happened there, why was it that we didn't hear about it until, you know, the movie at the level that we did? Obviously, we heard about Amityville. We heard about other cases such. But it's just interesting that one being as dramatic as it was, and Ed's feeling on
Well, you know, I think it's just the fact that the Warrens, I mean, they've dealt with thousands of cases, and I guess other ones just kind of overshadowed that one.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time the movie came out, it was time for the world to know that story.
Yeah.
But yeah, they've had numerous cases that were huge. I mean, they just showed that documentary the other night on the Warrens on the Travel Channel, which is fantastic. Which they talked about a lot of their cases on there.
Sure, sure. When you finally got a chance to get to the house, you're driving to Rhode Island to visit it for the first time, you obviously, you know, you know a lot about it. There's a movie out about this place. There's many and many people that have talked about it over the years. So there's a lot of hype about it. What are you personally expecting? Obviously, you just had a really creepy ass dream right before showing up, but a dream that seemed to have more to it than just being a dream. So are you going into this place with the mindset of, this is, I have no idea what I'm about to walk into? Are you thinking, you know, there's a lot of hype? Is the hype going to play up to what it is? Or are you thinking, you know, what are you thinking at this moment in time?
I was really, really excited to get in that house. I wanted to experience something because this is a different type of case.
Yeah.
It's an open case, but no one is like desperately needing help anymore. The owners bought the house, they're letting people come in. So it's not like, okay, we got to come in, we got to figure it out, we got to help them. This is more as, let's go experience something. So I wanted to experience something. I really did. And I was super excited on the way to that house. And I mean, things just started happening, I guess. I mean, before I even got there with the nightmare, and then yeah. Get in. And I mean, I went into the basement by myself, and you could definitely feel the energy down there. You could feel the energy all over the house. Just so many things happened while we were there. I mean, we were there all night. We were allowed to stay until 8 a.m, if I remember correctly.
Wow. Describe to me, as you pull up to the house and then you set foot through the door. I'm assuming you went through the door.
Yes.
Tell me, it's like no, actually, we crawled through the basement window. Why? But so you walk through the door. You're at this place of such lore and infamy. What are you feeling? Walk us through that investigation in detail, kind of step by step, what you experienced at the house known to the public as the Conjuring House.
Well, when we first got there, we all pulled up and we kind of just stood there and stared in awe, like, oh, we're actually here. You know, all those things that we've been hearing about, and it happened here. This is amazing. But we walked around outside. There's a lot of property. The backyard is huge. We walked around a bit, and then we called the owner and we told him, you know, we're here. He's like, come on in, guys. He opened the door. We walked in, and we just kind of spoke for a bit, you know, the do's and don'ts of what you're allowed to do in the house. You know, there was no live streaming allowed at that time. You can live stream there now. So he talked to us for a bit, you know, we signed waivers. And then he gave us a tour of the house, and then we started setting up equipment. Some of my personal experiences, we didn't even have any equipment set up yet. And I mean, I'm hearing disembodied voices. I'm hearing people say my name. At one point, I remember I walked into the library. Now, the library used to be Carolyn and Roger's bedroom. And Roger woke up one night because he felt three slashes appear on his back. And when Carolyn woke up, she was frantic, and she actually saw an old hag. So the library is very active. We spent a little bit of time in there doing our thing, you know, EVPs, spirit box sessions, that type of thing. And I remember we actually got this on film. The books fell off the library shelf, which happens pretty often in that house. And I mean, like, they shoot out. And I remember we were walking out of the library, and then I turned, and they just dropped. And I mean, we got that on film. That was pretty good that we caught that. We tried going old school around 3 a.m., which we basically sat around a table. And we didn't have any equipment out. It was the devil's hour, you know, 3 a.m.
Sure.
And we sat there and we just started asking if, you know, whatever is there, if you could give us a sign of your presence, that's what we're here for. So we sat there for a bit. It was like 10, 15 minutes. The floor started shaking, and the doorknob was actually rattling to the door of the room we were staying in. And I'll never forget this. Dan threw a ping pong ball into the other room. A couple minutes later, that ball came flying back into the room while we were sitting around the table. So, I mean, this type of activity, we're just like, we were taken back. We're like, oh my God.
It's amazing how active the house has gotten from all the accounts of folks like yourself who've gone in and done investigations there. I kind of somewhat put hauntings in some categories of, you know, almost anyone could have experiences here. You don't necessarily need to be super sensitive to have it. And then there's some cases where it's like you need to have the abilities to sense some of these things to pick up. Why?
In some cases.
Yeah. I mean, why is it that and this is, again, just an opinion question, that the previous owners who really, you know, wanted nothing to do with it, sold the house, that they didn't report anything about anything happening. Do you believe that nothing happened to them there? Or do you think maybe things were happening? They just, you know, in their own right, they didn't necessarily want to talk about them.
That could be something. I mean, they could have experienced something and just disregarded it.
Yeah.
They could have been, I mean, I think they were skeptics from what I have heard.
Sure.
So they could have just not given it any recognition at all. Or if something happened, like books flying off the shelf, oh, there's got to be a logical explanation for that, you know? So it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, is it, do you think that the activity has increased in this house since someone, or since the new owners have bought it, and now it's open to investigations because...
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, is it because more recognition is given? I mean, is this just a prime example? We hear about it all the time. We talk about it. We you know, the way of thinking for the longest time has been, don't give it recognition if you don't want it to bother you or you don't want it to continue, because there is such an extreme amount of recognition of this thing going on in the house. Almost the only thing that's going on in the house are people showing up going, ghosts, you know, people aren't just showing up there to watch, you know, reruns of Saved by the Bell, you know, on the couch. They are there to...
Now that sounds like fun.
That would be interesting. What's the ghost reaction to Saved by the Bell? New class, versus the original. That might be interesting to see what their thoughts are. Of course, the original was much better. But the...
we're like the same age. Yeah, we grew up on Saved by the Bell on Saturday morning.
Exactly.
I know what's up.
But just the recognition. Is this just, you know, prime example here of when you are having a case, when you have a building that is solely being used for investigation, it's all recognition to this thing, that you just turn the volume up tenfold than what it would be if somebody was just living there as a home?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the place is open primarily. You're just going there to investigate. And they're bringing tons of teams in. Everyone has different intentions. Everyone has different auras, different types of energy. Everyone has different methods of investigating. I don't agree with some of the things that have gone on in that house, because I just do things a certain way.
Sure.
There's really no reason to provoke anything in that house, I think, because you're not helping a family at this point. Like, I wouldn't go in that house and command something in the name of Jesus Christ to show itself, because there's really no need for it. It's active enough, and we don't need to get any evidence to validate a haunting, because we're not trying to help a family. I hate to say it's like a fun house right now, but it's one of those houses where it's just, you know, people go there to experience something. There's lots of houses like that right now that you go to investigate, and you want to see something. The Hinsdale House, Wildwood Sanitarium, White Hill Manor, the Bergen House. There's tons of them.
Mm-hmm.
So you're bringing all these people in there with different intentions, and some of them are doing things that they shouldn't do. I mean, I'm not going to drop any names. I saw a YouTube video. There's a couple of people there a couple of weeks back. And, I mean, this kid's just sitting there in the basement just taunting whatever's there. Like, come on, punch me, cut me, slash me. It's like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
What are you doing? That's not a very good idea.
And there's, you know, I think danger that can ensue with something like that. The people who own these properties, and they're allowing people to come in to investigate, are they setting, I mean, I know that there are a certain set of ground rules, but are there ground rules in terms of the ethics of how one investigates the house yet?
Yeah, I mean, there's certain things they don't want you to. They're pretty open to, you know, different methods of investigating. But I mean, there's. I don't really want to get into it. I don't want to keep anyone from going there.
No.
I'll let the owners talk about that. But I can remember one thing in particular that the owners do not want anyone doing in the house.
Can you elaborate on that at all, or?
I mean, they really don't want you to cross spirits over in the house. There's
okay.
a ton of spirits in the house.
Sure.
And I guess to them, it's like, you know, they're here. We want them to stay here. No one's really getting hurt at this point. People want to come and experience things. There's certain spirits that want to stay here. Don't cross any spirits over. Just come and experience the house.
Can you
be safe, have a good time?
Can someone cross a spirit over if the spirit doesn't want to be crossed over? Can a living person do that?
In my personal experience, no. The spirit really has to want to, you know, accept what they've done in life and accept the fact that God forgives them for whatever things they have done, and they could go to the light and be with their loved ones. They really have to want to go.
Sure. That wraps up the first part of our interview with Eric Vitale about the Conjuring House and the Warren team returning to it. In part two, we'll ask Eric when he was hearing disembodied voices upon entering the house, were others hearing them too? Why was there so much death on the property of the Conjuring House? Why are certain areas of the house more active than others? Does Eric have any fear of something following him home from such a location? And is Bathsheba the only spirit haunting this house? Those questions and more in part two. To hear it, become a Gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our program. Simply go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. For $5 a month, you'll get access to hundreds of our interviews in their entirety. And you'll also be keeping us on the air. We greatly appreciate that support. Go to thegravetalks.com, click become a Gravekeeper, or patreon.com/thegravetalks. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Brisky. Thanks for listening.